Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers, and today Lee Cantor is our producer. Lee, would you like to introduce our sponsors?
Absolutely, Lorraine. Today's show is sponsored by Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, project-based consulting, and permanent placement. Visit their website, DelaneyLLC.com, and learn why 100% of Delaney's clients describe them as outstanding and excellent.
Thank you so much, Lee, and welcome to our listeners today. This week, we will be introducing Steve Russell, CFO of PSA Healthcare, who joins us today to talk about the role of the CFO. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Steve, one of the elements that we do in the beginning of our show, I'd like to cut straight into, we do a CFO News of the Month. And this month, we'd like to talk a little bit about the Forbes Billionaires list. It's just come out. Special edition has just come out. And one of the elements is that from Mexico, Carlos Slim is the new number one. I guess he's kicked Mr. Bill Gates off the list. We may get into a little bit of discussion about the international markets as we talk with you today in the healthcare world that you live in.
Oh, that would be great.
Well, first up, Steve, tell us a little bit about your background. You've served in some senior roles. You're currently CFO of PSA Healthcare. Why did you choose the background and the path that you did to become CFO?
Well, Lorraine, my first leadership experience was at West Point, first as a cadet and then as an officer in the U.S. Army. And I served in a number of operating roles starting off in my career. I really enjoyed working in that type of environment, the people, the mission, the ability to see how my leadership, my management style impacted the success or the failure of the mission. Frankly, I could see how my performance and my mistakes could flow through and affect how we performed. But as I started to think about my career after the Army, I wanted to acquire additional business skills, broaden my network of thinkers, expertise, so I went to business school to get an MBA. Now, the business school gave me an opportunity to look at different potential tracks one could pursue for a business career. Finance looked like the function that would provide the broadest coverage and range of business. It looks at the narrow, it looks at the broad, it looks at the deep. I think the skills you pick up in one industry are often applicable to another industry. So from business school, I went to work at a company that made products you could touch, a car company, in that company's finance function. And I've been with operating companies ever since. And I've been in widely different industries, automotive, healthcare, technology. And believe it or not, some of the skills in automotive are very applicable to healthcare today.
That's very interesting, Steve. Now, that focus of the armed forces into the CFO role, I'm going to jump straight on into that one. Mm-hmm. I've served in some financial restatements, biggest challenges that companies are going through in their history. To what extent did those experiences for you bring to the regimen, if you will, of being a CFO? Is there anything that you learned from that?
Well, I think having operating experience of some type or exposure, knowing what goes on in the operations, can really help you in a CFO role or any kind of finance role understand what the numbers really are. So I think one of the challenges for any executive is go beyond the numbers to see what's really going on. And having some level of history, experience in operations is critical.
Now, interestingly enough, the armed forces tends to be an environment where orders are given from the top. The CFO role, has that been changing? Can you see that once what was 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago, the CFO giving commands, now that with the new Gen X and Gen Y coming up, has the role changed? Are you still giving orders, or is it more of a social interaction environment?
I think coaching, helping to lead from the front is really important, and I think especially with today's generation, being able to demonstrate to people what you want done and then letting them and encouraging them to go get it done and giving them cover and the resources to do it is important.
Mm-hmm.
So actually giving orders per se, I'm not sure that ever really worked very well. I think always leading from the front, showing people, and being there to support them and help them get through, that's what works.
Wonderful. And obviously accounting is an ever-evolving world. Technical subjects are changing. Revenue recognition's changing. You talked about going from the auto industry into what you are today, healthcare. It's a service environment. How are those environments different? You talked about blending them and learning from skills of one, adapting to the other. Help us understand the healthcare environment today and how that you've learned from those product environments.
Well, if you look, for example, the automotive industry, success in the car business is being able to come up with a process so you can minimize variation in the product and create the highest volume at the best possible price and the lowest possible cost. Healthcare has been very fragmented and is only today, I think, having the chance to really get involved and see, and you can apply it where you can apply some of these skills. Mm. So I think healthcare is if you will, sort of the new field, the last open frontier where classic management and business techniques can be applied to really make an impact.
Interesting. Now, tell us a little bit about PSA Healthcare and the realm of where you fit into the healthcare environment from the front to the end, from the patient getting sick to receiving benefits and then the whole claims process. What is your role today at PSA Healthcare?
Well, PSA Healthcare focuses on the home healthcare sector, and specifically it helps treat and take care of patients, typically children, who are discharged from the hospital with very serious medical conditions. The value proposition is this, where the hospital discharges the patient, but the patient still needs help. We then provide home health care, skilled nursing services to that patient for as long as that patient needs.
And what do you see in terms of the healthcare debate is hot? Our president has made decisions to not go to his mission to, I think it was Asia, in order to be here for the healthcare debate. Is there anything that you foresee coming down the road that would impact the services that your company provides?
Well, it's clearly been on the front pages for almost a year now, every day. And it is the hot topic in politics as well as in business, in the healthcare sector. It will affect us. We're not quite sure exactly how the full impact will unfold, but I think that in the grand scheme of things, anything that helps the fiscal management of the healthcare sector will be good for all parties. Mm-hmm. Now, there's both good and bad in some of the legislation that's going through.
Wonderful. Well, let's look a little bit about challenges. We've talked about the background and career and why you are here today. We are talking about healthcare debate. That's a big challenge for the U.S. market and several international markets. What do you see bringing that back down to the CFO role? Is there a particular challenge that today's CFO is undertaking that you feel and that your peers are facing?
Well, there are a whole slew of challenges. I mean, I think they fall into the buckets, the typical buckets of people, process, and technology. But I think at the end of the day, finding a way for a CFO to add value is the key thing. And where that value is, where you can get it, it often depends on the situation. Most of the big challenges revolve around people, helping the top line, attracting and retaining mm-hmm. customers, increasing market share, attracting, retaining skilled employees. Those are all people things. Process things are helping to cut costs, improving productivity, using technology for competitive advantage. A good CFO does all of those things, but I think that planning and looking to the future as best as anyone can do that is the big, big challenge and where a CFO can probably add the best value. So, like, how do you plan? What's your strategy? How do you balance the here and now with the needs of tomorrow? How do you anticipate what might happen and get there first? I think it was that great hockey player, Wayne Gretzky, who said that I skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it's been. The finance function always has to call it like it is, but to be the mirror that you look at and see where things really are. But if you can see what things will be like in the afternoon, not just in the morning when you look in the mirror, then you can get ready for what will happen. And that dramatically increases the odds of being in front of the press.
That's interesting, Steve. One of the elements of the CFO that, or the person that aspires to become the CFO of tomorrow, typically they'll come through one of two paths. They'll either go down the accounting, transactional-oriented path, or they tend to have a career in that more analytical, forward-looking rather than rear-view mirror. Yet the yesteryear tended to promote the more reporting-oriented, the more corporate transactional-oriented. So how do those CFOs make that transition from transactional-oriented to what you've described as capital management, human resource management, customer relationship building? That's a very different part of perhaps even the brain or the education to come through and develop those skills.
Well, I think you need both those skills, and I think that's part of the day-to-day challenge of every CFO, which is how do you look at the, if you will, sort of the tactical, and how do you look beyond and look out and see what's going to happen next? And that is the real challenge. And part of it is sort of staying in touch with the developments in the industry, developments in terms of accounting, GAAP, all the rest.
Mm. So what do you see? Let's talk about the people aspect. Clearly, we have an economic situation that is still ongoing. Some of the other countries of the world have been picking up in more recent months. Mm-hmm. But the U.S. economy, we've still got high unemployment. How is that impacting you in terms of your position? Are you still able to attract that newcomer to the accounting field at the entry level? Are you still having good flow and being able to provide that training to your team to mentor them through for their own growth?
Well, from an employer's perspective, I think the downturn has been helpful because there are so many good people that are looking. So it's much more of a I would say, a buyer's market, if you can say that, now than it was, say, 2 to 3 years ago. But, you know, looking beyond that, I think the challenge will be to sort of find the right people, get them, and then put things in place and give them an opportunity and a career path that will keep them motivated, excited, and help them down the road. Because clearly you can help pick up people right now, but if they're not motivated and challenged, you know, when the economy really does start to pick up again, then maybe you might lose them.
Yeah. And are you seeing your employees are holding steady right now?
Yes, very much so. I mean, we've had a much lower turnover than we've ever had in our history.
Really, really. Now, taking that in one step further, we talked a little bit about training the people aspects of that, human capital management, technical elements of the job as a CFO. You're in a healthcare regulated environment. How do you stay current? How do you stay technical?
Well, for finance people, there are a number of different ways to stay current. For example, your audit partners. I think you need to choose your audit partners well, pick an audit partner for whom you have regard professionally, personally. You don't need to become friends with your audit partners and team, but you do need to have enough of a good relationship where you can call them with a dumb question. And then as well as discuss later on the ins and outs of high corporate finance when that time comes. It also makes sense to try to get involved with different organizations, you know, FEI, Finance Executives International.
And now, are you a member of FEI?
I am indeed, and I highly recommend people that are in the finance function to look at that.
So if those that are listening today, how would they find out about FEI?
Well, just go to the website, Google it.
And it's Financial Executives International?
That's correct. And that's one very good organization that focuses exclusively on senior finance professionals. But there's other good organizations as well, and especially here in Atlanta, there's a number of good CFO roundtables and other networking organizations that are really to be recommended. And I can't overemphasize networking.
Interesting. And here we come back to the old adage of the CFOs of yesteryear tended to have a small circle, but today we're finding that the CFO of today and tomorrow needs to have a bigger circle, more advisors. The role of the CFO, particularly if you have a board seat, is much more challenging. Are you finding that today you need to have more advisors around you and peers?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a real challenge, and it's a lot of work because you have to do your day job, if you will, and look at the tactics as well as sort of the broader thing, and also then look at and plan for the future. And so having a network of people, whether they're advisors, informal or formal, it's absolutely essential to, I think, longer-term success.
So how does somebody who's perhaps starting out on that path, CFOs tend to be a little bit more conservative with a small c, a little bit more introverted people. We tend to be more easily adaptable to reading technical books and text and those kinds of things. How does one start to go out and look for a network? Would it be through these organizations?
I think so. That's the easiest and most clear way to try to get a network in place. It's always easy, of course, to sort of focus on, you know, the task at hand, the work that's got to be done, you know, by 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock today. But if you can take the time, and I think it's important to take the time, get out, network, find other people who are like-minded souls who have the same problems and with whom you can then share what your problems are. Because my view is that none of the problems we face today haven't already come somewhere in the past. So someone's already looked at this. So why reinvent the wheel yourself if it's already been done? Find someone else that's done it or is facing the same problem and share notes.
Yeah. Watch from their mistakes, huh?
Pardon me?
Watch from their mistakes.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, we interview CFO after CFO, and some of the more prestigious, well-recognized business people in the world actually talk about their failures. Let me turn the tables around to you, not to put you on the spot, but are there any particular points in your career that I won't necessarily describe or ask you to describe specific failures, but were there at points in your career where you said, you know what, I'm going to learn from that? And what were those turning points? Perhaps if you can give us an example.
Well, I think where my mistakes have come from is not having seen something that is bubbling and it coming up and biting me.
Going back to that future forward looking.
Well, right. One thing I have seen is that very good operating managers typically are very good at looking at the P&L statements. But I find that in the balance sheet, that is where trouble can brew.
Now, operational people don't tend to have that knowledge of P&L versus balance sheet. Financial people do, and it's very easily able. They are very easily able to adapt to that two-edged focus, if you will. Mm-hmm. How do you help that operational person shift balance from what they're probably made responsible for in terms of P&L, revenue, costs being in line, and profitability? How do you shift their focus onto the balance sheet?
Well, that's a challenge, but I think part of it is building a rapport and a real good working relationship with the CEO and the operating heads.
And do you give them elements of, I'll use the word training, that might not be the right term for it, but do you help coach them as to what it is, what we're even talking about?
I think that's what you try to do. And you try to show them what's going on so that they see and understand. I was at a company years ago, it was Lucent, where the operating heads were not really incented on balance sheet activity. They were very, very incented and very motivated by performance of the P&L. So they had, unfortunately, a disincentive to watch things on the balance sheet. I found, though, that if you could tell them what was going on with certain transactions that some of the operating heads wanted to do, if you showed them the impact, even though they weren't incented by that, they then understood and they would do the right thing.
The age-old debate of, I remember earlier in my career, I'd done the whole accounting experience, and this was really my first job as being a manager. I was responsible for fixed assets, and I really had what for me was an ethical debate. A line manager who was responsible for fixed assets and inventory came to me, and he said, okay, now let me understand this accounting policy of when something becomes repairs and renewals versus when it becomes a capital asset, because we had, at the time, $1,000 would be the switch from something being R&R to being capital asset. And he said, if I do the right thing for the company and I spend $100,000 to repair this $3 million printing machine, you're going to hit my P&L. And I can't afford $100,000 to hit me right now. However, if I do what is probably not the right thing for the company and I buy a new $3 million printing press, then I'm not going to have the impacts for that fully until 18 months down the road. You're the accountant. You tell me, what do I do?
Well, that's the challenge. And I think the thing there is to find the thing that makes sense for the company, to do the harder right instead of the easier wrong. And then it would raise the challenge of the finance function to go back and look at the incentive systems and try to change those incentive systems so that the operating managers do the right thing.
Mm. Incentives are a big debate. We've heard a lot of high-profile individuals, CEOs, having been knocked for what might be deemed as excessive compensation. Do you have folks in your peer community that you work with to help you make sure that your compensation programs are in line? And how does that roll out to your HR function?
Well, we do look at what our competitive peer group does in terms of its in terms of its compensation. Where we are in my company right now, I think we're generally in line both at the senior executive level, the middle management level, as well as at the people, the nurses, that actually make it happen for us. They're the ones that actually drive the value. So we're very, very acutely aware of what's going on with our competitors, what gets paid, how things work, to make sure that we're in line. We don't want to be too far ahead, but we can't really be too far behind either.
Mm. Now, has that compensation structure changed? Have you gone more towards a commission-based or a bonus-based or a performance plan-based versus where you've seen in your career 10 and 15 years ago?
Well, even presently, we have changed our incentive systems over the last year and a half so that the location directors are incented to drive growth in our business. So whereas before they had different incentives, now they're very much motivated, both financially as well as morally, to try to grow the business and move in the right direction. So they share in our success.
That's wonderful. And we're seeing a lot of companies go onto that. The typical sales manager of yesteryear might have had a high base salary and commissions that perhaps could take him or her to quite a very successful, comfortable life, assuming they generated the performance. Now we're seeing that those base salaries in that sales environment are actually reducing and that the commission compensation is growing so that the company succeeds when the individual succeeds and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, talking about those kinds of individual transactions, let's shift the topic, if we can, onto big transactions, transactions perhaps that affect the life of the company. You've had some experience in your career with particular transactions. Maybe talk to us about that. It's a forward-looking element for the CFO to look at what the owners of the company, whether it be privately held, closely held owners, or publicly held, or in your environment where it's more of a healthcare type scenario. Some companies might even have a membership base or a units based. Talk to us about the transactions that you've had and what you're seeing today in that market.
In terms of M&A transactions, for example?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I've seen, it really depends on the ownership structure of the company and who the owners are, what are their objectives, and what is their time horizon. If the owners are trying to create value, then I think the challenge is to look at the key drivers of the company and find out what drives performance. And then in terms of M&A transactions, to look at what other companies are out there that could help if you merge with them or team with them or partner with them in some way. One company I was involved with years ago, we were in the telecommunications space, and we were in a certain geographical region, and we thought we could drive significant value if we were to team up with two other companies. Okay, now this was both a lesson learned as well as advice for others. We turned down a financing arrangement that would have secured our financing future and our capital structure for at least 15 to 24 months so that we could pursue this transaction. And as a result, we focused on that transaction, and it never happened. And by the time it was all over, we were ourselves very short, and we were sort of in a very tricky capital market balance sheet situation, and we had to scramble to make it work. And it took us a while, and it sort of slowed our growth. So at the end of the day, we went for one outcome, which looked appealing at a certain point, but we then got our eye off the ball. And ultimately, we didn't generate as much value because we took our eyes off the ball, went after something that didn't happen.
So in that regard, the role of the CFO becomes very complex and possibly, one could say, a conflict in terms of supporting the ownership desire for that M&A transaction to occur, maybe to raise additional capital or to be acquired and to have those partnerships as you were talking about, but also the conflict of the cost involved and the impact on the corporate valuation should it not proceed.
Well, I think this is where the CFO needs to be able to look ahead and see what will happen in the future or what could happen in the future, raise the alarm bells and say, well, if this doesn't happen, what happens next? And look at contingencies, look at alternatives, because it isn't just a single clear path going forward. There are things that will happen as you go down that path, and you need to be prepared for what might bump you off course.
Mm. And how are those messages received? Obviously, you want to deliver them in the most appropriate way, but sometimes the CFO is often thought of as being the person that brings in the awkward ideas or puts a damper on opportunities that could be for the company. How do you deliver that message? How do you make sure that it's received well?
You have to fine-tune it, and you have to understand your audience. And you have different audiences because, for example, the CEO may be one audience, the shareholders may be a different audience, and even within the shareholders, you have differences of opinion. So you have to be able to present them information in the way that they understand, can absorb, and act on.
Now, in that regard, you talked about the shareholder group. Very often at a board level, the shareholder group might actually have what is referred to in wider circles as an inner circle. Do you first go to them and use them as a sounding board? Do you have trusted sources within there that can help you?
I think it makes sense to the extent that you can pre-socialize a plan of action or contingency plans. If you can do that, certainly do that. Because if you come up with a plan and they have really no interest in it at all, well, then you've wasted time, and you've wasted their time as well. And you've actually damaged your own credibility so that the next time you have a problem that you want to bring to them and to their attention, they won't listen to it as well.
Yeah. Now, in that transaction world, obviously there's a tremendous amount of due diligence that takes place, and perhaps we're back to the conversation we started with a little earlier in terms of you saying the CFO needs to balance the elements of operations, the forward-looking, the backward-looking, the human capital. To what extent at that point does your focus shift to very much forward-looking and very much operations? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I think the CFO wears many hats. I mean, you provide financial leadership, you try to determine strategic direction, and you try to align your financial strategies. But then you have to look at what the capabilities are and balance those. And then, for example, with sales and marketing, pricing, you know, the CFO can help the operating partners understand what the facts are, help them with pricing models, help them review what those models will do, and try to get them done.
Does the CFO set price?
It depends. It depends on the way the company is structured and how the decisions are made. Some companies I've been at, the CFO does set the price. Other companies, sales and marketing is a much stronger function, and the sales and marketing will set the price.
Mm. And in that regard, perhaps let's say sales and marketing department sets the price. Is the CFO the bearer of bad news to talk about the revenue recognition and to determine how that flow of cash and the sales cycle impacts revenue? Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, I wouldn't say it's being the bearer of bad news. I think it's being the bearer of news. One thing that I like, and this is something I learned from the CFO of Lucent Technologies years ago, facts are your friends. And if you can bring facts to the situation and share those facts with people and have people understand them, then it's no longer an emotional discussion. It's a fact-based discussion. And you may not have all the facts you need. You might have to go get more facts. But you have information, and you can then make the correct decisions, or you can make the most correct decision that you can, given what you know.
So how do you know when you've got all the right facts, and when do you know whether to dig deeper or not?
Well, you don't always know. So sometimes you just have to go with it and think you're directionally correct. Other times you have a sense that maybe you need to find out more. And it really depends on who your audience is. Maybe the CEO wants more information. Maybe he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
It depends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Life is not certain, definitely when you're the CFO. Let's talk about that in terms of challenges. We've talked a lot about the conflict role of the CFO, and we talked a little bit about earlier in your career. Does the role of the CFO today involve crisis management?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the CFO is in the middle of crisis management. Now, it depends on what kind of crisis it is. If it's a small crisis within one of the functional departments, say HR, or sales and marketing, maybe the CFO doesn't get involved. But if it's a real strategic watershed or a decision where the CFO can bring facts or resources or information or decision-making power to bear, well, then, yes, the CFO should be involved.
Wonderful. Any particular elements of particular crises that you've gone through in your career in the path to CFO that you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I think the key challenge is try to look ahead and try to see what might happen and prepare for maybe not the worst, but be prepared for something bad to happen. It's always nice to look at things, how they might work out if they're working out well. But yeah, I think it makes sense to anticipate what might go wrong and be prepared for that.
Now, in that regard, does the CFO get involved with contingency plans and those kinds of elements for the business?
CFO should. In fact, I think that's a key role of the CFO is to look at and develop contingency plans. Think about them and have them at least ready to execute on if something bad happens.
So in that regard, looking at the risk element, the risk function often even reports up to the CFO.
Yes, it does. And there's different things that can happen in terms of contingency plans or contingencies. But I think the CFO is one of the few operating executives in the company that looks across all different functional areas and, well, he or she may not be responsible for every functional area, touches each one and therefore has a role to play in either providing information or getting information or helping to plan. So whether it's in any function, whether it's sales, HR, compliance, risk management, the CFO should be there trying to help whoever is responsible for that function.
Now, that being said, taking on that responsibility, is the future of the CFO role shiny and rosy?
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, the CFO is really what one makes of it. And to the extent that a CFO takes the bull by the horns and tries to help, then that CFO is adding value. not only to the CEO, but also to the shareholders. And I think that's the main thing.
Now, does the CFO, how describe to the listeners how frequently the CFO will be in touch with the shareholders, maybe with a representative group? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, how often the CEO communicates and interacts with the shareholders really depends on the CEO's relationship with those same shareholders. I think the most important thing is that the CFO and the CEO have a very strong, regular relationship and dialogue where they sit, think about things, strategize, look at contingencies, and work with each other. And the CFO really has to watch the CEO's back. Now, the CEO may or may not want the CFO to have a more or less discussion with the shareholders. That's the CEO's call. But the CFO needs to be prepared to handle any questions coming from the shareholders or the board, whomever, and basically state the facts as he best knows them.
So the CFO and CEO are really a team.
Absolutely.
Well, wonderful. Well, this has been a great time chatting with you, Steve. We've very much enjoyed it. We have a tradition on the show to ask our CFOs a CFO tip of the month. What's yours?
Be accessible to the organization and to your customers.
Wonderful. Short and sweet. Be accessible to your organization and to your customers. Thank you very much. That's a great tip. We have been interviewing Steve Russell, our guest. Thank you very much, Steve, for sharing your innermost thoughts. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much to our contributors, to Forbes magazine for providing some wonderful information about the new billionaires of the world. Certainly many of our CFOs and listeners would like to be one. Thank you very much also to our sponsor, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to companies. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. And thank you for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.